Welcome to democracyonthemove.org, a podcast tribute to the people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it toward its true democratic principles. Content for this episode was recorded on Friday, April 9, 2021. I'm Dan Schaefer, your host for today's podcast, and thank you for joining us. Today we're talking with Bobby Bostic, a convicted felon currently serving a sentence of 241 years. You heard that right. 241 years. The crimes for which Mr. Bostic was convicted were committed back in 1995 when he was 16 years old. Now you heard that right. Mr. Bostic was just a kid when he was sentenced to serve 241 years in prison. Now did he kill someone? No. But he and a partner, both of whom had been drinking, smoking marijuana, and PCP, went on a small crime spree on the night of December 12, 1995, where they used a gun to threaten people and rob them. They shot one of their victims who was grazed by the bullet but sustained minor injuries. 16-year-old Bobby Bostic was soon apprehended and charged with 17 criminal counts. Young and scared and not getting any good advice, he stood alone and defended himself the only way he knew how, by acting defiant and showing no regret. Of course, that turned out to be a bad decision. He was ordered to serve time on each count, not concurrently, but consecutively. Now, there are many details of his journey through the criminal justice system, but suffice it to say for now that there is a 42-year-old grown man still sitting in prison, paying for the crimes of his 16-year-old self. He will not be eligible for parole until he is 112 years old. Since landing in a penitentiary in Jefferson City, Missouri, Mr. Bostic has had time, a lot of time, to think about his crime. Most people would probably give up on themselves. I mean, after all, who lives to be 112? But Mr. Bostic dug deep into his soul and found a strong belief in himself, and shortly after arriving in prison, he committed himself to becoming a better person. He entered the system with an eighth-grade education and, within a year, obtained his GED degree. He has discovered a thirst for education. He has read over 1,000 books. He has obtained an Associate of Science degree from Adams State University and is just a few credit hours away from a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology with an emphasis in criminology. He has become a prolific writer of books, articles, and poetry. In fact, he currently has 7 books published on Amazon. If you read any of his writings, you begin to realize that he reaches out to the world. He wants to contribute. Of course, he very much wants to find a way out of prison, but his goal is not just to get free, he wants to do much more. He has specific plans for starting nonprofits that will help troubled youth. He wants to give back to society by helping kids avoid the mistakes he made when he was 16. In all his time in prison, Mr. Bostic has not only made himself a better man, but he has reached a state of remorse over the harm that he caused. He has written letters to his victims asking for forgiveness. Retired St. Louis Circuit Court Judge Evelyn Baker, who originally sentenced him to 241 years, has since changed her mind and now spends a significant amount of her time trying to win his freedom. Additionally, State Representative Nick Schroer has drafted a bill that would allow Mr. Bostic to appear in front of a parole board. Representative Schroer, along with several state legislators from both parties, approached the governor asking for clemency. In 2017, the ACLU lodged an appeal of Bostic's case to the Supreme Court. The case received signatures and statements of support from people including Ken Starr, Sally Yates, as well as over 100 current and former judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement officers. These efforts have not yet been successful. To date, Mr. Bostic still sits in prison. Efforts to win his freedom continue, and he remains hopeful. Mr. Bobby Bostic, welcome to Democracy on the Move, and thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to talk to you all.
Right. Now, I've read some of your writings. You and I have been corresponding back and forth for the past few weeks. Could you help our audience get to know you? What is life like for you? For example, can you give us a sense of your daily routine, what life is like in prison?
A day in prison, there's good days and there's bad days in here. The good days is when you get to do some progress, and the bad days is like when you probably stuck in solitary confinement. Out of my 25 years in prison, I have spent at least I would say seven of those in solitary confinement back in my younger days when I was in trouble in prison when I first came.
Mm-hmm.
A typical day in prison is just, you know, you wake up, you stuck in a 6x9 cell, so you really can't go nowhere, but, you know, you got your books, which I do. I just, when I wake up, wash my face, brush my teeth, say a quick prayer, and then I start reading until they open the door. You go to breakfast, eat. Mm-hmm. You go back to the cell because you got 5 custody counts, so you're pretty much locked in the cell all day.
Mm-hmm.
And you get out about, I would say, 5 hours a day, and the rest of the 19 hours you're kind of locked in the cell. So,
mm-hmm.
So within that time of being in the cell, though, I use my time basically to read and write. Sound like a bored day, but that's what I've been doing 25 years, reading and writing basically, and listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
With the few hours that I'm out, I get to exercise and go to classes and things like that. And also, I spend a lot of my time doing college courses, so my day is pretty structured. Even though I'm stuck in the cell, 6x9 cell, I still use my time wisely by reading and writing. You know, I put the college books down, I can read an autobiography or something, or a magazine, newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And then the TV there, which I don't get distracted by, but I watch the news sometimes, and that's
okay.
A typical day in prison.
So where do your thoughts go? I think that the impression I get from you is that reading and writing are your way of expressing or of perhaps experiencing some degree of freedom. Where do your thoughts go to when you're not reading or studying for your degree?
Then my thoughts go to the things that I want to do, the dreams, because everything I see around me reminds me of not where I want to be, but where I need to be. Where I'm at is in prison, so when I think about other things, it's like, how can I make these dreams happen? And that's when the patience set in, because it's like the first book I wrote took 20 years to get published. So it took 20 years to get published with no changes that was made from the day I wrote it to 20 years later. Everything here takes patience.
Well, now you mentioned, or I mentioned in at the top of the podcast that you are attending college classes. Are there on-site instructors, or do you do everything through correspondence?
Yeah, I do everything through correspondence by the mail. I don't get no help. There's no teachers to instruct me because I'm not enrolled in school, and I don't have nobody here that's doing college, so I got to do it by myself, basically.
Wow.
And, you know, like a course on the street, it'll take 6 weeks, but in here it takes much longer because everything go through mail, so they can take weeks to get a grade back. If you ask a professor a question how to do something, they can take weeks to get back. So you really just, you got to free flow through everything and do it yourself.
Wow. Go ahead.
No, I've been doing that for years, and that's why I had failed college algebra several times before I could get the degree, because it was that hard. You know, with no help, I had to do it by myself for her alone.
Yeah, that is a very hard subject to tackle without any help, that's for sure.
And yeah, there's no on-site instructors, and you got to pay out of pocket. You got to pay for the courses up front. So friends and family pay for that for me, and sponsor, you know, people who came along who want to help me educate myself and help me pay for it when my family didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's just concerned citizens to help me pay for it, people that became friends over the years.
Well, that's good that you're getting some help in that area. And you have, I think, 12 credit hours to go or something like that before you get your bachelor's degree?
Oh, yeah. My plan is to get that before the year out. And I work on that every day. So that's been a goal for years. It just was the lack of funds. At first, I didn't have the money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I came across the money to do it, and I've been doing it ever since. You can do up to 5 classes at a time. And now I'm slowing down my load. I'm doing like 2 classes at a time. And that's with that degree, that'll help me be more established with my nonprofits that I'm going to start for youth when I get out.
Now, you've, in the course of taking all this college courses, and as I mentioned also, you've read many, many books. Can you tell us what are your favorite books out there, just out of curiosity?
My favorite is, like, my top 5 will be, like, a book I'm reading now. It's called Become Who You Were Born to Be by author named Brian Sosa. Of course, the autobiography of Malcolm X, that was the book that changed my life and made me want to change. And just those two, and then Steve Jobs' autobiography,
mm-hmm.
Walter, or the guy, Sam Walton, who started Walmart, his biography. And last but not least is any spiritual books, you know, like any self-help books. You know, it's too many to name, but yeah. That's those type of books. Those are my go-to books when I'm feeling down or anything, just to get through the day, or seeing other examples of people who made it through their hardships. Let me know I can make it through mine.
Got it. So now you've not only read 1,000 books or more, you've actually become quite a prolific writer. Can you tell us what the central themes are in all of your writings? Where do you go to when you're writing?
It's all nonfiction. I only write about what I know, you know, like the experiences that I experienced. All my books are only things that, you know, my little short life that I was on the street and my prison life, which is, you know, like two of my books are about prison, every day, what people don't know. My mother, she passed away from cancer when she was 42. I wrote her life story as a tribute to her and all other single mothers to let them know that now we understand, you know, like you have to lose something to really miss something sometimes. And yeah. Kids don't appreciate their parents enough. They don't listen to their parents until they're in trouble. And then sometimes that ain't good enough. You know, my mother had to die for me to really realize. And once I did, I wanted the other kids to know that they shouldn't have to go through all them things.
Wow.
You know, and then I wrote about my generation, or the younger generation, the next generation, how they misunderstood. You know, like, I wrote it from a sociological point of view, because people don't understand this generation, and our generation ain't articulate enough to express their frustrations either. So I captured that in that book. And my unpublished book's about, you know, living in the inner city. My autobiography, just I only write about what I know, and all the poetry is inspiration. I got like 9 books of poetry, 3 of them is published, and the other 6 are not published. I plan on starting my own publishing company when I release, and I will release my other 8 books when I get out. But the 7 that's out there now that are all published, they're available on Amazon.com, available at all bookstores. Those books are just about prison, single mothers, just things that I know, nonfiction.
Okay. Yeah, I was especially interested in one of the things you wrote. I know my wife was just almost brought to tears. You sent us one of the papers you wrote about if you could talk to yourself when you were 16. And I see a lot of emphasis there on providing guidance for people who are young that need that guidance, that are looking for it. You're in a position now to provide that at this point. As you know, part of your service to society really would be to help some of these young kids, such as yourself, when they need that guidance at the critical times in their lives.
Oh yeah, that'll be part of my life work. And it's like to be able to do that, I can, like if a kid was gonna come here next month or next year, if I was out there, maybe I could stop that. So in that sense, it's a waste of me still being here when I can contribute a lot out there to kids to really use my example to keep them out of trouble.
Yeah.
That'll save taxpayers' money of paying to keep somebody here that don't need to be here, and to prevent kids from coming here that shouldn't be here.
Yeah. Talking about your freedom, I mentioned earlier that State Representative Nick Schroer has been very active in presenting your case to other state legislatures, and he gathered a bunch of signatures from them, and they were all able to approach the governor. Do you touch base with him at this point? And if so, could you bring us up to speed on what he and others working with him have been able to help, or how they've been able to help win your freedom?
Oh, yeah. Mostly he talked to my attorneys. He go through them, and they got the petition in, and they just waiting on the government to see if he's going to sign it or not. As far as that, we don't know. The bill, the House bill that he put up as far as going off a parole, it's not moving. It's kind of stagnant right now, so we're trying to gain support for it among the legislators because, as you mentioned, 104 of them signed a letter requesting that he grant me clemency. So with that many, we'd have thought that the bill would pass with ease, but I don't know how the politics go, so bills are hard to pass sometimes, but I hope it does pass, though.
Yeah.
So if it does, I get a chance to go for pro immediately, and hopefully I can make pro.
Yeah. I believe that's House Bill 636, and among other things, it allows people such as yourself to be considered for parole after a certain period of time, even though technically right now you're not to be considered for parole till you're 112 years old, which is, you know, basically a life sentence. Can you walk us through, there was a 2010 Supreme Court decision, Graham versus Florida, and it would seem to apply to you, but people say it doesn't apply to you. Can you walk us through that?
Okay, well, in 2010, the guy Terrence Graham in Florida, he was a juvenile. He had committed a robbery of a restaurant, got probation with a life sentence backup, and then when he got out, he robbed a museum, robbed somebody in a house, and then he got caught with guns, so he committed three or four crimes. And when he got locked up, they didn't charge him for the crimes. They just violated his parole and gave him a life sentence, which in Florida is no parole, so life is life without parole. So the U.S. Supreme Court said even though he had committed multiple crimes while on parole, he shouldn't be given a life sentence if he didn't kill nobody. So that technically most states, well, 80% of the states apply Graham to consecutive sentences like mine. It said even a sentence that ain't life without, if it's the equivalent of life without, it equals life without, and those juveniles got to be able to make parole. That's what most states did, but Missouri didn't find that. So in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court came out with another case and said even if you kill somebody, if you was under 18, you can't get a mandatory life without parole. So they allowed guys who had first-degree murder that was under 18 to be resentenced. Other states also applied that to juveniles who got consecutive sentences like mine. And then in 2016, they made it retroactive to anybody who had those type of sentences that they got to get a resentence hearing or be able to go for pro after serving 25 years. So Missouri allowed all these juveniles, anybody under 16, I mean, that was under 18, to go for pro after serving 25 years. So if I had a first-degree murder, of course I'd have made parole by now if I was charged with first-degree murder. But in 2017, the Missouri Supreme Court issued two decisions. One, a guy had some robberies, and they said he can't go for pro in his lifetime. They said it don't apply to him because he got multiple sentences ran consecutive. And then one guy, he had three murders. They said he get resentenced because his sentences were ran concurrent. So since he has three murders, then he get to go up for pro. He out now, though. He did 32 years for three murders. He on the street.
Wow.
But when they applied the decision, said the guy can't get off of robbery, that's where I fall in. I can't never get out because I got robbery.
Yeah.
And that's the logic of Missouri, but it don't make sense to let the guy who had three murders out and the guys who got robberies can't get out. But they saying that as long as they sentence ran concurrent, they can go up for parole. And as long as our sentence ran consecutive, since we got multiple crimes, they saying that Graham don't apply to us. The decision of Graham versus Florida don't apply to guys like me who only got robberies. So that's what things stand now in the courts, that the U.S. Supreme Court haven't specifically told Missouri about consecutive sentences, but it's only Missouri and three other states that haven't applied Graham to consecutive sentences. Every other state have resentenced juveniles in my situation. So had I been, you know, in Arkansas, Iowa, or anywhere else, I'd be on the street if I was in another state. But since I'm in Missouri, the law in Missouri says that, you know, if you kill somebody as a juvenile, you can go for parole, but if you don't kill them, and you're stuck in prison the rest of your life. It don't make sense, but that's how they interpreted the rules in the Missouri Supreme Court.
Yeah, I guess the technical part of that is that if you're sentenced for life in prison for committing murder, then that rule kicks in, but you were never sentenced to life, although with a sentence of 241 years, I mean, it's kind of cynical to believe that's not a life sentence.
Like the judge said at her sentencing hearing, when she said you were dying in the Department of Corrections, is that not life without?
Yeah.
You know, when she made it clear, she said you were dying in the Department of Corrections, you don't go for pro to the year 2210, nobody would be alive in this courtroom. When she said that, that's clearly life without. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
To say it ain't life without.
Yeah.
And of course, 110, you know, my life expectancy is only like 74, 75 years old.
Right.
So of course I would be dead at 110 years old. I mean, 112 years old. I can't go for all, I'd be dead. So
yeah.
It's basically just stuck here on the technicality, basically.
Yeah.
And another thing that I wanted to tell the viewers is that, you know, like my co-defendant, he pled guilty like 5 months after I got sentenced. He got 30 years, right? And he would be out now. He had been out now, but he did die in prison, you know, due to, they said it was drug overdose, but the report came back that he was improperly restrained and he died, you know, due to the how he's restrained. So he died at 40 years old. The public defender that was on my case, he died at 42 from brain cancer. And the prosecutor that I had, he died at 40 years old from Lou Gehrig's disease. So
wow.
There's been a lot of tragedies involved.
Yeah, that is.
Well, the prosecutor died at 40, my public defender died at 40, and the guy who came to prison with me died at 40. Even though he had a chance to go home, the judge told him that she was letting him go because he pled guilty, but he still didn't get a chance to make it out there. So
yeah. Well, it's a fact also that your judge, Evelyn Baker, sentenced you to serve consecutive. I mean, isn't that unusual, or is that?
Yes, it's unusual because what we were expecting was the worst case scenario, that was she would give me the 30, but people didn't even expect that she would give me the 30. They thought that she would give me less than that, because even though the jury recommended that, she still could have gave me less, but she chose to run it consecutive. But she said if you read the article, she said out of 25,000 cases of people she sentenced, this is the only one she regrets. So, but it's kind of her pleas is kind of falling on deaf ears, you know, even though she's trying to correct it, but there's nothing being done about it as we speak.
Yeah. Well, we have to keep working on it. Moving over to, I know we might be running up against a little bit of time right here, but in one of the letters you wrote to me, you said that you keep your projects and your goals in front of yourself. I like that because, yeah, I'm the same way. So let's look forward to, I'm not sure exactly how this is all going to be resolved, but let's look forward to the day that you win your freedom. What projects and goals are you putting in front of yourself? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, well, like all of the reading I've been doing lately, I've switched all my reading to preparing for release. At first, I was reading about what to do during incarceration and how to, you know, set goals. But now I'm reading about what to do. I'm reading books on how to start a publishing company, how to start a nonprofit. So I'm looking forward to the day I get out, that within a week, to have my company started. All the reading I'm doing now is, you know, how to start a nonprofit so I can work with kids. Everything is geared towards getting out now. No, so I switched my reading and habits to planning on what I'm going to do when I get out.
You have a blueprint for everything then?
Oh, yeah. Everything is wrote. Everything, got business plans. I got the nonprofit. It's drew up just like a real nonprofit. I took college courses for that, too, on how to run a nonprofit. So everything is drew up. And then my sister, she started one already. It's called Dear Mama after the book, but it's called Dear Mothers Assistant Mothers Association. It's just for mothers to help other single mothers. She started that one already. So my other ones, I drew the blueprint up for them just like the one she started already. So, I mean, everything I'm trying to do, I'm already on course to do it. I just got to get out. You know, everything else is planned. It's the only thing I'm just here. Days, it's like a waste of time just being here, but I'm still here right now. So.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, what can our listeners do to help?
Well, they can call the governor's office and ask him to request to give me a clemency. They can also call 573-751-1470. That's Nick Shore's phone number. They can call him and ask him to support the legislation. And if they're from different parts of Missouri, they can call their state senator and their state representative and ask them to please vote yes on House Bill 636.
Okay.
And that's it right now. We only can ask them, the only two avenues of relief right now is that bill and that clemency. So one of those things got to try to happen. They can write letters to the governor. asking them to get Grammy clemency, or they can write their state representatives asking them to support the bill that will allow me to go for parole. Mm-hmm. And also, they can send me letters of support, too, through snail mail.
Okay. Yeah, you have a website called freebobbybostick.com. It's all one word. Bostick is spelled B-O-S-T-I-C, freebobbybostick.com. And on that website, there are places you can get instructions on how to write Mr. Bostick if you are sending snail mail. Don't make the same mistake I did and send a self-addressed stamped envelope, because that doesn't work. You have to just send a regular envelope. And you can also follow progress on Instagram and Twitter at Free Bobby Bostick. Again, all one word, Free Bobby Bostick on Instagram or Twitter. And as you say, write the governor and give support to Mr. Nick Schwarr, who is pushing House Bill 636.
And two, before I go, I want to read two essay and a poem, man.
Absolutely, yes. Let's do that.
This one essay is called All My Life. This is the essay I'm reading now. It's called All My Life. 3/4 of my entire life have been spent inside of a prison cell. Since the age of 16 years old, I have been incarcerated. I am now 42 years old. More than a quarter of a century accounts for 75% of my life confined in jail. Forever fighting off the stigma of being institutionalized, I hold on clearly to my memories of the streets. Besides all the knowledge that I've learned in here, as well as the things I've accomplished, I have been in prison for what feels like all my life. The quick 16 years that I spent in the free world doesn't nearly compare to the long, slow, hard 25 years of suffering that I have spent in prison. Yet, I must not lose sight of my victims and the people I've harmed. I am not innocent. This is no pity party. My story represents too much redemption for that. I celebrate the good along with the bad. I said that to point out the fact that I came to prison as a child, and I have been here for nearly all my life. I dislike prison. I dream of leaving here every day. For 25 years, this is all I've known. In a few more years, I will have been locked up twice as long as I was out in the free world. That time is creeping up fast. My heart sentence of 241 years has been universally condemned, but due to justice being denied, I'm slowly rotting away inside of a prison cell for all of my life, according to the state of Missouri. Prison hurts. It hurts your body. It hurts your bones. It even hurts your soul. I see so many men here become bitter. This place eats them alive. So much misery stews inside of them that nothing comes out of their mouth but hate. They hate the world. They hate themselves. So what do they have to lose? A man in here would stab you for jumping in line in front of him or staring at him too long. I live this every day. This is my reality. This is what I have been surrounded by for over 25 years. This is the prison living that has constituted 75% of all of my life. I once wrote that I'm not a model prisoner because prison does not model me. What I mean is that the negative environment of prison has not consumed me. I haven't become prison, and prison has not become me. I have a lot to look forward to. I never gave up, although I was sentenced to die in prison and told that I would remain here all of my life. Over 2 decades later, I'm striving for better. Staying optimistic, I believe in the goodness of life despite being surrounded by the worst of the worst. Life is a gift and not a curse. I am going to take this gift of life and make the best of it. In fact, that is what I have been doing the past 25 years inside of prison. I know that I have been here almost as twice as long as I was in the free world, but I still have all of my life ahead of me. It would be easy to give into despair while mourning all the years I have spent in prison. Imagine coming to prison as a 16-year-old child and remaining here until you are 42 years old with no release date in sight. Giving into despair would not help my situation. On the other hand, all my life consists of the life up ahead of me. I am living for the future, not for the past. So in spite of being sentenced to die in prison, I'm going to live my life for a purpose for the rest of All of My Life. That was the essay called All of My Life. Mm. And lastly, I would like to leave y'all with one of the latest poems I just wrote.
Okay.
This poem is called A Dream Come True. I want a dream come true by Bobby Bostic. I want to succeed in a world of publishing so bad. Just to make it, I will give everything that I had. Only a struggling author knows what it's like to read poetry and write in magazines and wish he was in it, all the while dreaming of being published every second, every minute. Dreams of being a published author often kept me up at night. Rejection from dozens of publishers gave me frostbite. When the flame went out, it got cold. Freezing and starving from rejection, I decided to get bold. With many irons in the fire, technology made the self-publishing scene hot. Nowadays, I bypass the gatekeepers of literary agents, editors, and whatnot. No longer will I heed to their unwanted criticism. Standing on the shoulders of giants, I am inspired with relentless optimism. 19 years ago, I wrote my first book, but I just published it this year with no fanfare or drama. It is my mother's life story, and I titled it Dear Mama. Soon afterward, I published my second book called A Generation Misunderstood. I didn't get the sophomore jinx, so there was no need to knock on wood. Mm-hmm. 30 days later, I published my third book, Life Goes On Inside Prison. Full circle is coming, my vision. Moving at a fast pace, but this is nowhere near my last dance. For the fourth go around, I released a poetry book titled Mind Diamonds by Happenstance. Mental Jewelry is my fifth book, and is a collection of poetry that I published this year. Mm-hmm. 10 more complete manuscripts in my archives, shifting my enterprise into full gear. Putting out my memoirs, other poetry, and nonfiction books is something that I yearn to do. Self-publishing my first five books is living proof that becoming a published author is a dream come true. Okay. Yeah, that was that second poem. And for people to see more of that or hear more of that, they can just go to Amazon and order my books, and they can see more of that. Yeah. And in the future, I hope to talk more with you on here so they can hear more of my writings, with my voice behind it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely want to follow your progress on subsequent episodes of this podcast as you continue struggling for your freedom and continue to want to do good things and make yourself a better person.
Okay, and one more thought I would like to leave the readers with, just to note, for the listeners to know, there are good days in prison and there are bad days in prison, but there are more bad days than good days. I am very optimistic, but we all get discouraged sometimes. You ask me how it is to wake up in here. Mm-hmm. Well, I have been here since I was 16 years old. I have spent over 25 years in prison. So I will tell you what it is like to wake up in here. Prison is not easy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the night seems like it will never end. Yet it can get dark sometimes. And at other times, the daytime seems too long. Too much light in a dark place like prison. At other times, you realize that it feels like you're living in a time warp here, because the time that go fast for y'all go too slow in here. It's like we're living on two different time capsules. But I write more about that in my new book that was released today called Time, Endless Moments in Prison. So please read that book, and it'll give you further details about what it's like to live in prison.
Okay.
But at other times, you realize that life is beautiful no matter where you are, because you are still alive. And 60% of the people I grew up with, they got killed in the streets. My little brother, my cousin, so many people, all my friends, most of them are dead. So even though it's hard in prison, I still know that life is beautiful. So sometimes when I hear people complain, I try to remind them of the blessings that they got. And despite everything I went through in prison, everything I lost, I try to make the best of life every day. But yeah, in here, we all get depressed sometimes because I'm surrounded by so much ignorance and misery. But me personally, I've outgrown prison, and I just want to be free. I just need to be out of here because there's nothing left here for me to do. It's just dead time, and I'm just ready to go.
Okay.
And I hope that people that listen will try to do everything they can to help me go, and hope that everything that we all go through in life can be a journey for all of us and the learning experience.
It's amazing that your spirit continues to amaze me, Mr. Bostic. It's hard to find people who can really lift up their spirits like this, even in the most dire of situations. I really appreciate you coming by to talk with us today.
Okay, and I appreciate talking to the listeners, and thank you all for taking the time out of your schedule to listen to this. And in the future, I really hope to do this again, and we can all talk and share our experiences in the future.
We've been talking with Bobby Bostic, a convicted felon currently serving a sentence of 241 years, who simply asks that people listen to his story and decide for themselves whether the democracy we live within can tolerate a man being sentenced to serve his entire life for serious but ultimately not fatal crimes committed when he was 16 years old. You've been listening to Democracy on the Move, a tribute to all those people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it back to its true democratic principles. Please tune in each week where we will feature guests and topics that'll keep you in touch with our march toward a more perfect union. If you have any suggestions for stories and or people you think we should cover at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through our website contact page at democracyonthemove.org/contact or send us an email at info@democracyonthemove.org. You can also comment on our Twitter page at All on the Move. If you find today's podcast interesting and informative, please tell your friends and family about us. And if you'd like to help sponsor the podcast at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through the website or email. I'm Dan Schaefer, producer of the podcast, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. It's been my pleasure to be with you today. Please have a safe week ahead, and we hope you'll tune in to our next show.